Hello, everybody, and welcome back to your favorite semi-monthly wrestling podcast. I guess I'll call it now. We're not on annual yet or bi-monthly, so yeah, let's go semi-monthly. So it's Wrestling with the Truth. It's BC back once again, and I have a very special guest with me today, the man with the most awesome terrible wrestling takes in the business, my good friend Bishop. How you doing?
I'm doing well, BC. Thanks for having me on. And what better way to do a part-time wrestling podcast with another part-time wrestling podcaster?
I did like the irony of that.
Yeah, absolutely. And even if we put both of our shows together, it's still a part-time show. No, I always love chatting with you, whether it's on Twitter or in person, on Zoom, I guess I should say, or anything like that. We have a solid time going back and forth. And even though we agree on a lot, the ability to just have a conversation about wrestling is all I ever wanted out of the podcast thing. And me and you, we definitely conversate pretty well about wrestling. Shit, I think we did 45 minutes on Public Enemy, so.
Yeah. I agree, man. Like, this is like I was thinking this week, you know, I just want to talk to some cool people that just enjoy wrestling and aren't going to be like insane, you know, like we're seeing online and stuff like that, because if you just use that social media for a snippet of what life is like in the wrestling side, you think everybody just had mental health issues. But really, there's a lot of really good podcasters that think the same way or can at least have a conversation without attacking each other and just like talk about the different points. So, yeah, that's what I figured we'd do this episode. More so focused on the Raw that just happened, what's going on with WWE, and what we're looking at for WrestleMania. And you just shared some exciting news actually for yourself. So do you want to make that public in case there's some fans out there that might seek you down?
Yeah, or even if I don't release my own episode announcing the news.
Yeah.
That, with the new release of tickets this past Monday, you know, me and the fam, we got three tickets. We're going night one to WrestleMania. It's so cool, man. You know, as a kid growing up, that's all you could think of is the grandest stage of them all and all the VM voices announcing the WM. They live with you forever, man. And so the idea of going, and funny enough, my the little man, the pawn, he loves NXT. So we're gonna do stand and deliver at noon. And then carry it all the way. So we're spending a whole day in Philly doing stand and deliver for NXT and WrestleMania Night 1, where we are super excited. And he's getting, so I'm not going to talk too loud because Easter's on Sunday. So in his Easter basket is going to be the tickets. So
he's going to lose his mind.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. It's going to be great. So yeah, we'll be there. You know, I'll be wearing some type of TWT merch just so you guys can seek me out, even if it's just the hat. If you want to stop by and go, yo, Bishop, I'll be like, oh shit, you guys actually listen. So that'd be cool.
That would be really cool. That would be really cool. That's great to hear. And I mean, geez, that's gonna be a fun day of wrestling for sure. I like it a lot. Yeah, congratulations on that.
Thank you. Yeah, and right, look, on. Philadelphia is only an hour away. And the prices came down. You know, resale tickets we were looking at it was going to cost us upwards of $600 a ticket. We're getting in the building for less than $600 for the three of us. And that's really, really exciting.
Yeah, for sure. And this is your first time going to WrestleMania?
First time WrestleMania. And it'll put me at three of the big four. Because I didn't go to, I haven't been to Royal Rumble yet. So yeah, but so I've done SummerSlam. We did SummerSlam in Detroit last summer. I did Survivor Series a couple years ago when it was Big E versus Roman. And I went solo to that because it was during COVID times. And, you know, for all you political people, you can hate me for getting the vaccine and hate my wife or love my wife for not getting it. But that's why I went by myself because it was during COVID. So now with Mania coming up, that would put me at three out of the big four. So, of course, can't wait to start planning a Royal Rumble now. Just getting greedy.
Yeah. So we can officially say the boyhood dream has come true.
It's coming. It's 2 weeks away. Let's do it.
I can't believe how fast it's coming along here, because it felt like it was dragging for a little while for this build to WrestleMania. And then as soon as The Rock appeared on the scene, everything just kind of went into hyperdrive in a good way, of course. I mean, I'm not sure what I'm going to title this episode right now, but part of me thinks it's just going to be like, can you believe that people were actually pissed off about The Rock showing up for this WrestleMania build? And look what we're getting now. What are your thoughts when you first saw The Rock show up that first night? What were your thoughts? Were you worried? Were you excited? Did you think this is what it was going to be like?
So I had conflicting opinions because of the Cody promo. Yeah. The Cody promo was that I sought counsel with someone who knows you better than you. So The Rock comes out, great. But then it completely transitioned to Cody's not on board with what's happening. So that really like fucked me up. But I remember The Rock being on many interviews saying he would only come back to tell the full story. So when you first see him, that's the beginning of what's going to happen. So everyone that rushed to The Rock stealing Cody's main event just so you can get Rock versus Roman was never what The Rock wanted. So I never thought The Rock would come back for one match, one thing. He wanted to come back to start the beginning of a story so he can build to the end of it, kind of like they did with Cena three manias in a row, right? He messes over Cena, beats him the next year, loses the following. That's the kind of timeline that I think is what they were always going to start with. So for the beginning of it, for everyone to go, we want Cody and the Cody crybabies and all that stuff, was such a beautiful turnaround by The Rock with the Cody crybaby stuff. When everyone was saying we want Cody, of course, I was hashtagging no, we don't, or who is we? And I went on my buddy's show, Wrestling on the Rocks with Arif Marsh. Check us out every once in a while. He just got married, so the show's down for a little bit. But anyway, I went on there and I kind of explained, like, why are you guys jumping to the gun? Because what did we see on TV? Cody said, I talked to The Rock. The Rock came out. That's it. That's all we saw. That's all we saw. And then by the time it came back around and it looked like it's now The Rock on Roman's side and not Cody's, me and Marsh, we both kind of agreed. They took the bait too quick. Yeah. The internet took the bait too quick. This is where it was always going to go. But as you see, it's been what, like 6 weeks, maybe like 4 or 5 weeks, this whole Rock thing has happened. And it's had these massive peaks and then this plateau. And then to your point, this last Monday, this massive peak. It's because they were going to tell this over time. They were going to take their time, but they bit so quick. Like, well, let's turn it around. Let's put this in hyperdrive. So
yeah,
I'm really enjoying, and you had mentioned something about, you know, my opinion of Cody. I'm enjoying Cody's ability to have to get out from underneath of something instead of always riding the wave of the top. Right.
Yeah.
And seeing that happen. Great. He still sucks on the microphone. He has a hard time delivering his perspective. And the whole Too Sweet and Bullet Club thing, you could keep that somewhere else. That's for people. Every time I see it, it's just like, okay, so this is about you and not what you say. But that's another thing. So I don't know if I rambled too much for people to really pay attention to what I was saying. But in the overall, I think it was great that The Rock came back so they can give some juice to Cody needing something. Because Cody's story is winning the title. And I still have Roman Reigns' character up so high. They have to bring that down. And the only way you can bring it down is with the final boss. So,
yeah. That's my biggest thing there.
So pick apart whatever you want. We'll go back and forth.
No. I agree with you on pretty much everything there. I mean, I'm the guy who the day of WrestleMania, when all this craziness was going on about Cody losing, I'm like, yes, no, this was the right call. Cody needed his hard times. He needed it. Everything was coming too easy. And I said, trust the plan is what I said. You know, trust the plan. They're going to build him back up. Now, what I think for me, what has happened over that time, I think either WWE or Cody, I don't know who it is, dropped the ball. It could be Vince being involved and stuff like that. And they still hadn't given him his hard times. Yeah, they gave him Brock Lesnar, but he beat Brock Lesnar, you know, like, I mean, come on. Like,
he never really lost to him either. He lost by passing out because he didn't give up. Giving up is what made Austin the super baby face.
Yeah, exactly. And so he still didn't have a hard time with that. Like, I wanted to see Brock Lesnar beat the living dog out of him and put him out for a little while. And then he has to come back. I wanted to see him lose to him a few times and come back. And then, you know, at the time, thinking that might be the final boss. You know, that's the big guy that beats Roman, you know?
To your Brock Lesnar point, had he lost, the only adversity Cody faced after WrestleMania was the one loss, which really wasn't a loss to Brock Lesnar, and then the loss of the tag team titles. And having something to overcome has never really existed within Cody and his things. And that's a problem for fans like me that where if you tell me somebody's great, I want to see the greatness, but it also has to be on a level above. the problem people have with Roman's run that, you know, he's only had like 30 something matches. When you have a guy like Roman, where the character is so high, so strong, he doesn't have to have many matches because most of them are going to be memorable anyway. The one with Drew at Clash at the Castle, the one with Sammy in Montreal, the smash him, stack him with Edge and Daniel Bryan, beating Cody, the build with Jay at SummerSlam. He's had these moments of big matches where you remember that. Seth has had, I think they said, 60-something title matches since he won the world title, and I think that has to do with house shows as well. But what do you remember about Seth versus anyone with that title? So Cody has to build himself to be a viable contender to a Roman while also bringing Roman down so Cody actually can beat him. So where I have agreed with you, BC, when it comes to Cody, is that the strife is what solidifies the character, right? Like, coming through those hard times where, for instance, the SummerSlam match against Brock Lesnar, he got sent to the outside, manhandled like crazy, and then what's the end of the story when it comes to the match? Oh, if Cody gets his chance at offense, he's going to win. And that's just enduring all things, not being great at anything. So where I was looking for Cody to really have some obstacle to overcome, for instance, what completely got me away from giving a shit about Cody at all was the torn pec against Seth. That's your opportunity to actually lose. Then when you come back with a repaired pec, you then beat Seth and go, it was my pec that got me, not you. And we still haven't had that moment. He just lost the other week. Cody just lost the other week to Drew McIntyre. And the whole story of that was Drew McIntyre using interference, which he didn't use the interference. He took advantage of the interference. He didn't call for it. It happened to him. But Cody losing was great. I don't know if you remember if you watched the strap match with Nakamura and Cody, right? Cody's getting beat down like crazy. He gets misted. And the perfect opportunity for him to lose on bullshit. You have missed, you have bull rope, you have all this stuff, and he still wins. Had he just lost on the bullshit, I'd be like, damn, Cody got caught. I can't believe this. Build, 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 build. And that hasn't happened. So not to cut you off and to, you know, steal your point, but I agree with you where that build from last WrestleMania till now could have been infused with so much adversity that they just didn't, because there's something about Cody losing that they're afraid of.
Yeah, and sorry, my internet went down for a moment there. I think I left off at beat the dog out of him or something like that.
But yeah, I tried to pick up for you, so yeah, you have less to edit.
Yeah, no worries.
I sat there for a little bit to see if you came back, but you know.
But I agree with you. Like, there needs to be more. There needs to be more piled on, you know. It's a good point that you make. It seems like they're afraid to have him lose, which means maybe they don't have as much faith in the strength of his character. And are the fans going to turn if that's the case? Because they've had plenty of people over the years that, you know, took loss after loss because you knew what the big payoff was going to be at the end. Like, take a look at like Daniel Bryan or something like that, right? Where, you know, no matter what you heap on the guy, there's going to be that payoff at the end for him. But, yeah, it was frustrating to me watching this. And we finally, with The Rock coming into play, we're finally getting some of that adversity that he needs right now. There was still, he was still getting sunned and looking kind of weak in those promos. But now that they've got the cuffs off on the promos a little bit, and that beatdown on Monday was exactly what he needed. I know people are going to say, what are you talking about? But he needed that. We need to see him vulnerable in a way that you're worried about your hero. You need to be worried about the hero, you know? Yeah. We need to see some kind of peril for our baby face. And that's what we're getting, right? And then that's the whole point of the heel. The heel shouldn't have the peril. They should have it too easy so that you want to see him get his comeuppance. And that's what's been missing. So I'm glad to see that. I was going to ask you, as far as the promos and The Rock and all this stuff, we'll get to him and Roman in a second, but just keeping on the Cody train, did you feel like Cody was getting buried by the promos? Not on purpose, but just because Rock is just so far above with these promos, and even Roman with the promos, and maybe that last promo they did before, which led to the beatdown, the LSD promo, let's call it, the little LDS. Dick syndrome. Yeah.
LDS,
yeah. Do you think that kind of saved him a bit in the eyes of the fans? Like the fans like you and me, I'm talking about, not just the Cody crybabies. I'm talking about you and me that we have to believe, right?
Yeah, I actually, not me, no, because if Cody's character is above reproach, then he's above cheap shots like that. Mm-hmm. So that's where, like, my problem with the Cody character all along, right? Even this last one that he had, he's talking about the kid with cancer and the best man and the birthday party and all that stuff. Look, I get it. And as a character, as a Cena thing, it's beautiful. It's amazing. I love it. When I first got back into wrestling, John Cena points out a kid in the sun with a sign that says, I survived cancer. I started crying. Like, this, you can feel stuff when there's authenticity to it. And Cody's character is above saying little dick syndrome because that's not who he is. And if he's going to be that, guess what? He's going to lose because everyone else can little dick syndrome Cody better because that's not Cody's promo style. So it didn't save me at all. It was more of like, okay, but you're not the shit talk tough guy. That's not who you are.
Yes. Yeah.
That's, you know what I mean? And then now that with Roman cutting him down, calling him a politician because he comes out in suits and stuff, it's like, exactly. Cody lacks authenticity. He is, I've said this several times, he is playing the character of John Cena. That role that Cena had is what Cody is. He's playing that. He's playing it very well. The kids love him. He's selling merch. Excuse me. He's doing an outstanding job at that particular character. I'm not invested because I feel the lack of authenticity and I feel the lack of oomph. For instance, he's winning because he's that character. He's not undeniable. That's why he is this character. For instance, Drew McIntyre right now is doing the best work of his career. He is
100%. Yeah.
He is on fire with his promos. He is relatable to his transgressions. He's starting to sputter a little bit because he's lacking more to say. So every time he says, I've prayed for this, it's like, yes, Drew, we've heard you say that already. You know what I mean? So like, it is waning a bit because he has less to build on top of, but he's doing the best work of his career because it's authentic. He doesn't like Punk. Go ahead.
Sorry not to cut you off, but I want to add on that. I think I agree with you that the pray thing was starting to get a little bit old. Because he didn't have that foil to play off. He needed Punk to be there. Now, as soon as you brought Punk back on Monday, all of a sudden, now you got the foil to play off of, and you got that cassette that's in the foil right now. Like, here's a quick question for you, and I'll let you continue on what you're saying. Are you more, based on what you're seeing right now, I'm more excited at the idea of seeing Cody rock and then rock Roman than I am Cody Roman, because it's kind of taken second place to it. I'm also way more excited to see Punk and Drew than Seth and Drew. It's like, let's just get this over with Seth and have the belt go on Drew so we can finally have that Punk and Drew, because they're doing such a good job of being foils for each other.
Yeah, I think Triple H is having like he's got like this, he's juggling too many stories at the same time. Like he's projecting the Punk Drew thing and wants to keep that on us without giving enough meat to the Seth Drew thing. And by doing that, he puts too much of an emphasis on the long term. So the short term is kind of like really murky when you're looking at it, you know? So I don't disagree with you. And I think that's why this WrestleMania build's been a little bit rough, mm-hmm. but of what's hot, they've given you. So when it comes to the main players, and to your point, you want to see Rock Cody because WWE now gave a fan like you a reason to want to see Cody, you know, and we haven't had that because Cody's just going to win because that's what Cody does. And that's what his promos are, is that I'm going to be the most resilient superstar of all time. So I'm going to win. I don't necessarily want to see anything to do with Punk because I'm just not a fan. Although I did enjoy his promo this last Monday.
Yeah.
I thought it was some of his best WWE stuff since he's been back because it just felt really, really smooth, you know, and it wasn't too much of the digging, and it sounded like they all really wanted to play off each other. So I appreciated that segment for sure. Where most of it has come off too snarky and all that shit, but they are keeping Drew and, well, maybe not, because on commentary, Michael Cole said it it now looks like Drew is the one keeping his eye off the ball when it comes, because it was, you know, Drew kept telling Seth, pay attention to me, pay attention to me, pay attention. Now he stopped paying attention to Seth. Seth got him back. So that was a good storytelling. Storytelling, guys. Storytelling.
I know. Let's not get into that thing,
you know?
Imagine that.
So back to your original question about the Cody of it. And I just think his character really does lack the authenticity of what he's speaking, because while you're out doing those things, I get it. But that's what Titus does too. You know what I mean? Titus O'Neil is out doing that stuff all day long. So
yeah,
it's not special. But if it's going to relate to your in-ring character, then say something besides, I'm willing to fight everyone. Like, it's just, it's the Shawn Michaels, more guts than brains, right? Like, but you're also telling me you have the brains, but your promos are always choppy and just don't really line up. So having this, the best thing he can do was like what happened before War Games, which is stop talking, let everyone else tell the story, and then do your expressions, and then be the person that you say you are. But when he's front and center doing the talking, it just doesn't work for me. It just doesn't. And if something pops up, hey, I'll give him the credit. But, you know, as far as Cody's side of these stories, I mean, look, even when he's talking about his mom and like I said, the kids and stuff, it's just not relatable. Because it feels like it lacks the actual pop. So, for instance, when he's talking about how tough his mom is because she's seen it all through Dusty and all this stuff, right? Like, cool. But guess what? The Rock's mom has been at ringside for basically every pay-per-view for the last 15 years, and she's seen it all too. Mm-hmm. You know, like, so it's not special. Like, shouts to your mom, Cody. Like, that's awesome. But it's not special. Because when you talk about lineage and impact and greatness and all this shit, The Rock's mom, sorry, better than your mom, you know? Mm-hmm. And if The Rock wanted to say that, like, cool. Because, hey, and I forget Cody's mom's name, apologies. But while she's sitting there, guess what? So is my mom. And she will slap the shit out of you because she's been slapping the shit out of people since she had her own promotion in Hawaii when she took it over from my grandmother, who was married to my grandfather, like, all of that. Meanwhile, yeah, your mom was just married to a wrestler. Story-wise, so why would the impact of what Cody's saying that is similar to the truth of the other side, as far as the mom go, why would I think that feels more important than what we already know about The Rock's mom? It just doesn't add up. You know what I mean? So, like, those are the kind of things that where when he's speaking, like, I get what you're saying, but it's not cool. Or it's not as impactful as he may think, because we also know this stuff about other things, you know? And if his adversity, some people say his adversity was being Stardust and going to AEW and doing all this stuff. That was his adversity. He came back. As far as I'm concerned, WrestleMania, when he came through the stage, that's who he's been. That's his character, is that guy. The hero has returned. That's it. Everything else before that, that's somebody else's story.
Yeah.
So since the hero's come back, he hasn't lost. He's lost what? Two matches? The one to Roman? Or three. The one to Roman, the one to Brock, and the tag match where he lost the titles. Other than that, he hasn't lost. So, yeah, the whole promoing thing, I'm sorry. Everything he's saying, it just doesn't add up. And then they're using, sorry to the truth of the matter, but they're using the cheap version of the positive heat with the kids and the best man and all that stuff. Like, that's the cheap version of, oh my God, he does great things, you know?
Yeah, and I mean, we don't need to establish that anymore. We know Cody's doing great things. I mean, he just, the look of him, you can tell he's a baby face. The whole finish the story thing is, when he very first came back, okay, I could get behind it. All right, makes sense. But now that we've had the WrestleMania loss and stuff like that, it does, it shouldn't be still finish the story as in, oh, I got to do this for Dusty, or I got to do it for my mom or something like that. No, you got to finish your own story. And by the way, you don't finish a story. I get that. There's more stuff going on, but this should have ignited a new version of Cody after that. It should have been the night after WrestleMania. It should have been like, all right, I got screwed here. Enough about my dad, enough about my family, enough about this. This is about me. This is about Cody Rhodes and me just taking down the bloodline brick by brick by brick. And then just as you're about to get that bloodline taken down, all of a sudden this final boss comes in, the way you go, and you got another angle on it. But I'm frustrated with this whole Cody situation because I want a good ending to this story. But there's something missing there. And The Rock is finally pulling stuff out of, he's pulling magic out right now. Not that Roman can't do that. It's just that they need to insert this other piece in there, because if Roman starts doing it, then it's just a complete burial of Cody, right? You know, you just, you need it. They're helping him along here. And it's not to put down Cody. It's just that there's such a strong story with the bloodline and Roman and all this stuff. And now Rock enters the fray, and they would have almost had this unbelievable match with The Rock and Roman. And then you still got the Cody thing. So I don't know. I don't know if they backed themselves in a corner, or if Cody's backed them in the corner, or what's happened. But all that being said, what do you predict for this whole, the tag team match and for actual Cody Roman?
Yeah, I have a couple different, you know, fantasy booking things that, you know, it's not my thing, fantasy booking, but there's a couple different ways it can go. And even just speaking to you, a new one came up that I wasn't really looking at. But we really might get like Rock versus Cody at SummerSlam. You know, we might get a Rock versus Cody one-on-one, because Roman hasn't been doing anything with Cody. This has nothing to do with Roman. I'm okay with that. I do feel like if the Bloodline win on night one of WrestleMania, that Cody's going to end up with some help. And my fantasy booking that keeps popping in my head that I don't want to happen, because I won't be at night two, is that Austin comes out. And with the Texas connection, and I mean, no, I don't think I've heard, well, besides DDP, but the way Austin has talked about Dusty Rhodes his entire career, he's the perfect savior for this situation, especially being The Rock. And the fact that Triple H can't help, right, because of his heart condition. So I think that would play into a furthering of the story. But the way things ended on Monday night, we really could end up with a really shit night two main event that just has to do with a complete annihilation of Cody that leads to a Cody Rock thing, which is the perfect adversity to build Cody into the superstar champion of next year's WrestleMania by getting through The Rock through SummerSlam and then onto Roman at WrestleMania next year. I could see that happening. And I think that might be the most logical story, unless the one thing that I've been thinking the entire time is that this is The Rock and Cody trying to fuck over Roman. I still think that that's the most likely story that they've been telling. Because, again, Cody hasn't done anything to backtrack the very first comment he said. I sought counsel from many people, some of which know you better than you, right? That's what he said before The Rock came out to go face-to-face with Roman Reigns. And Cody did nothing between then and the announcement in Las Vegas to say, this isn't what we talked about. You know, so I'm still assuming this is some type of fuckery that has to do with The Rock and Cody for sure. I think that's the most logical thing, is that in some way the Bloodline will shit the bed night one. And then when the Bloodline try to interfere with the match on night two, The Rock comes out, make sure it all happens. And then Cody gets his win. And then we get Rock Roman at some point next year. That's what I think is the most logical. And it is a great way to, like I said before, bring Roman down to help bring Cody up at the same time. Because, again, when we're talking characters, I don't care what anyone wants to say about quality, quantity, doesn't fucking matter. This Roman Reigns, this particular four-year run, and the equity that's been built in the characters around this Roman Reigns, it's a Mount Rushmore level run. Now, there's just been way too many superstars over way too many years to really just pick four anyway. But if anyone says that Roman is the greatest of all time because of this four-year run, you really just can't say no for the sake of saying no. You know, it's like people saying LeBron James over Michael Jordan. Like, you can't say no just to say no. You definitely have to have the conversation afterwards. Then you get into facts and opinions and all that bullshit. What Roman's been doing, it's so high level that when it ends, it has to be right. If Cody beats Roman clean, that next match, that next night for me is, well, and then what? There's nothing left for Cody to ever do ever again. He just beat the greatest of all time. But if he beats the greatest of all time with some type of fuckery in a way that's what helps him overcome. It's like, fuck, Cody, you finally did it. The bloodline jumped in. They got all fucked up. Roman got kicked in the dick by a teenager, like whatever. You know, Samantha Irvin's, you know, accidentally sprayed perfume in his eyes because she was misting herself. Like, whatever it would take to bring Roman down so Cody can win. Then while Roman's rebuilding himself and Cody's building up off the championship and they meet again, you now have equals going after it with no fuckery. Cody wins. Oh my God. Like, that's all me and you have been talking about for the last year. It's not about Cody's wrestling ability. It's not about Cody's ability to wear suits. It's not about Cody's ability to be relatable to fans that care about him. It's Cody's character and presentation being on the level of someone like Roman Reigns, to where when the victory happens, there is equity. If he beats Roman right now and there's this big gap, well, then what? Because all you want to see is Rock versus Roman, you know, or Roman just wipe the floor with Cody next time because he's not going to get caught this time, you know? So, yeah, I think that's where we're going. Some type of fuckery to get Cody the title, which I'll be okay with. As they're continuing to tell this story, if Cody has that actual adversity in front of him. So,
yeah, I hear you on that. Like the stuff that you were saying, the stuff that Cody brings right now, the suits, the look, the hair, all this stuff, right? The kids, that's for after he's champion. That's what you need that for. Right now, we need the grit as to why he's going to become champion. What's the why for this, aside from this whole let's finish the story? Because we need more than that. I'm with you. Like, man, like part of me is like, maybe they just keep it on Roman forever. I don't know, but I don't think so. I don't think that's going to happen. I've got a couple of things that I want to fly by you. So one, going with if Cody wins, I think what we could look at, because that was going to be a question of mine too. What's next if Cody wins? Like, who's waiting for him? Really nobody, unless we have something go on. So one of my thoughts is, why wouldn't Seth turn on him? Like, what's the point of Seth being in this match? There's no stakes in it for Seth, except that he could re-injure his knee before his championship match against Drew. So why the hell is he even in this match? Cody's in this match because if he wins, then he doesn't have the bloodline all at ringside for his match, which has been the big problem for him. They're interfering and everything. If the Rock and Roman win, well, they get bloodline rules. But what's in it for Seth? So what's the point? So it seems like there should be a reason why Seth's in this match, and that should be that he's going to screw over Cody. Then Cody has to overcome that, and he has a built-in feud with Seth going on. To me, that seems like the most logical thing. And then they can also take the belt off Seth, no problem, because you got Drew almost being a tweener right now. You're going to have Punk be a tweener. Get Seth to be a heel, whatever. And then you can elevate Jay up to the main event and stuff like that too. The other one I like, and I don't know if they would go this route, but I almost would love to see, let's keep it straight. Rock and Roman lose to Cody or something like that, or they win, whichever, but have it so that the Rock does something to take over the bloodline from Roman. And it causes Roman to be a baby face, you know, like let's freshen up Roman a little bit. Let's get him on the baby face side. And then you have Rock and somebody else, and you have Cody and Roman kind of teaming up against them. You can take the belt off of Roman, put it on Cody, and then you have the Rock as the next challenger for Cody. I'd even be cool with the Rock taking the belt off Cody and Roman getting his redemption at the next WrestleMania and taking it off of Rock. You know, like there's your Rock Roman final boss match, right? But I can't see them going that route for it, but that would be my ideal to have that going on. But I just don't understand Seth's skin in the game in this whole match.
Yeah, I've heard that floated out there too, that there would be some type of double turn where, you know, Seth and Rock both turn on their opponents over the weekend in however way that would go, you know, Seth would cost Cody in the tag match, but then Rock would cost Roman in the main event. And I'm not mad at that either. The only thing I don't like about the whole Seth turning on Cody thing is Seth hasn't lost either. You know, like he's had an opportunity to let Sammy take over, let Jay take over, let Nakamura take over, have an opportunity for that belt to go do something else. And it seems like this is prime time for Drew to do that. So if it is a long-term thing, let's say Seth is the one that gets his ass beat in the tag match, can't beat Drew the next day, then he's the one that comes out because he's just pissed at Cody, or he takes Cody's knee out before the main event, like something like that, which they're not going to, you know, get rid of Cody's entrance on night two, but no. You know, stuff like that where they can build a story within, like, I'm definitely cool with. So to your point, like, I mean, Seth has been like worse than an IC champ right now. You know, he's been really forgotten about. And even, I mean, the only thing that Rock has to say to him during this whole thing is, and I'll make that title disappear. So, I mean, if that's on the line on night one as well, because that is part of what he said, if they do win night one, like, what does that mean for Seth's match the next day? That's going to have Punk on commentary now, you know? So it's really, really tricky storytelling with all of them. I'd be okay with anything that's new, anything that's surprising. If it's cut and paste, we know what's going to happen. Again, problem with last year. I was nervous before last year's WrestleMania because it seemed like so cut and paste. Cody was going to win for the sake of winning, not because it was the right story to tell. And I think right now they're telling the right story. And I like the fact that me and you, even sitting here being open-minded, we can see it going so many different ways.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay. So just to finish up this Cody and all this main event picture. So gun to your head, Cody wins?
Yeah. Yeah, I think so. Okay. I think so. And how they do it for me, as long as I feel okay afterwards, like, cool. But if it's, they lose, you know, Seth and Cody win night one, it's a straight up match night two, and Cody just wins, I probably would have a problem with that.
Yeah, just I agree.
Mm-hmm. You know, but if there's some type of way to get, like I said, to bring Roman's character down a bit, so him and Cody are eye to eye. And then again, we're talking about a Roman match main eventing WrestleMania. There's a chance it's a 35 minute classic of Roman just making Cody look like $1 million. And that's okay too. That's okay too. So yeah, gun to my head. Yeah, I would say I'm like 70-30. Cody's going to win this one.
Okay.
I really want it to feel good, you know, like the story of it, you know?
Yeah. I think I'm in the exact same mindset. 70-30 is a good way to put it. It has to be in a nice kind of unique way because it's going to feel like a letdown if it's just they win and then Cody gets the fireworks and all that. We need something there.
I tell you, I think as much as I think it's 70-30, Cody wins, Cody winning the end of WrestleMania night two, if Cody wins, I do think it has to be 50-50. Cody won. Oh my God. Something else happened.
Yes. That's what I mean. You know, that's what gives you something. And then it's got to lead to something after Mania as well for Roman.
Yeah. Cause too, if it's just Cody clean, no ancillary story to go with it.
Yeah.
Then we just wasted 4 years of Roman Reigns. And I just don't. Yeah.
The only, exactly. Cause, The win clean last year would have been fine. That would Roman's buildup would have catapulted Cody in that case. This year, after him losing, no, we need a whole lot more tacked on to this, you know,
Well, if Cody got catapulted last year, there was less for him to do afterwards than there is now. For instance, Jay is on his own. Sammy's now built up from the win last year too. He had zero challengers last year. So if Cody was to win that, it would have been 6 months of, oh my God, I just won this. He'd come out, smile, sit on a throne. He wins, all good, whatever. It's just character and work done. Fight Roman at SummerSlam, get completely washed at SummerSlam. You know what I mean? Yeah. Where now if he wins through that adversary and the other story of Roman got fucked over by whatever, then you're watching the rebuild of Roman, plus you're watching the title defenses of Cody. That's what was, last year. I don't think that was possible.
Yeah. Okay. I got you on that. Yep. All right. And quickly, gun to your head on Drew Seth. Who's winning that one?
It's Drew. It's a great time for Drew to do it. Yeah. It's the first time Drew has had a character that's been kind of undeniable, where you're like, you can't really pick it apart. And when it comes to everything Seth is doing, you know, you hit the nail on the head. It's what is Seth even doing anywhere? So having Drew be that title holder and being a real dick about it, it would be awesome.
And I mean, I feel like no matter what happens with Seth, if he loses, we're going to have either a quick turn or we're going to have the slow burn to Seth going crazy and turning heel anyway. So you're going to have the heel turn with Seth anyway. So you gotta do that. I mean, yeah. Okay, perfect. I love that. All right. So for you, what are the key matches other than this that you're interested in for Mania?
I think they pulled something out of their ass with this tag match, the tag ladder match. That's something that I don't think anyone saw coming. And now that you know, with the mystery tag team of whoever that's going to be. You know, they did that once in Orlando where out of nowhere, the Hardys came back and it was one of the loudest pops of all time. I don't think it's going to be as old school as that. I did hear some rumors about the Dudley Boys because it's Philly and ECW and all that stuff. So sorry if I just ruined that for someone. I hate when people do that for me. But, you know, at least they wouldn't – I don't think they would win the way the Hardys won that particular one. So I think that's going to be fun to see. You know, I said it about last year's Mania. I love the tag team turmoils they did because they were just fun. They were just fun to have. I'd like to see LA Knight and AJ Styles really get their opportunity to shine. You know, as hot as LA Knight has been, he really hasn't had a breakout performance. You know, he had his match with Roman in Saudi, right? Is that where that was? Which went out well. You know, Logan Paul KO and RKO is going to be amazing just because Logan Paul doesn't have bad matches. And are you kidding me? Randy Orton and Kevin Owens leading a three-way match? Come on. Like, yeah, that'll be pretty. I just think it's a great card overall. The women's matches, Jay versus Jimmy. The only thing I feel bad about Jay versus Jimmy, and hopefully they pull something out of their ass here. I need to see a video package, man. Yeah. I need a video package of the little, you know, tanned and tinged photos of when they were babies and, you know, Rikishi doing a narration. I can't believe my boys are doing it. Like, I need to cry. I need to cry watching this thing. You know what I mean? Like,
going to say that. Yeah. They need to make me cry. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Like, because it's there and they're both so good and they're not getting the time to tell their story on TV. The face-to-face at Royal Rumble, huge, massive pop, right? You know, they got another opportunity a couple weeks later to really be face to face. And I don't know. I love it, man. I want to see that come off well for the two of them for putting in the work they have for the last 3-4 years. And the women's matches, you know, I think Bayley really hasn't had a wrestling opportunity to remind people who she is. She's done a lot of story work over the last, you know, 3 years since she came back at that SummerSlam in Nashville. And started Damage Control. She's done a lot of story work. But if she can get in the ring and her and Io can put on a match, I think that's where we can remember exactly who Bayley is. Mm-hmm. And of course, Becky and Rhea, I mean, that's two of my favorites for the last 10 years that, you know, it could be an icon defining match for both of them, especially Rhea to kind of start hers. And if Rhea can beat Becky in a way where she overcomes the greatest woman of all time, you have now a complete rocket ship of Rhea, and hopefully you would break down the Judgment Day after that. So,
yeah. Okay. So for me, that tag team turmoil match, when I first saw it, I was like, I don't know, what are we going to see here? Cause the tag team division has been so strong for me. The team I would throw in there, if you're going to have a mystery team, I'd throw Corbin and Breaker in there and just have them go off. But you know what else I'd like to see? I'd like to see them go off. They win the titles and then have Priest cash in there, and they take the titles back with a cash in, because just right now there's nothing you can do with Priest as far as heating them up for that cash in for the title picture. So use it somehow so it's successful. You know what I mean? So have him cash in. They take the titles back or something. What are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, I think it's a fantastic take. Shouts to Justin Time 211. He hates when the Money in the Bank is used for anything besides the main title because he thinks it devalues it. My point on doing something, because I said about Otis back when he won it, I was like, fuck it, him and Tucker get back together, get those tag team titles.
Take the tag teams, yeah.
Yeah, and it would have made Tucker and Otis Heavy Machinery mean something again. And it didn't happen, and Otis has just been doing Otis things. But that moment, now Otis's win goes to Miz, who led to Bobby Lashley, which led to Big E, which was great, but if you do something memorable with the Money in the Bank, then hell yeah. So I'd love that. I'd do anything that makes sense. And just like the, you know, open challenge contract on NXT, whatever it is, I forget what it's called. You use that as your opportunity, your best chance at an opportunity. And that's what should happen. It's a perfect idea too, especially since the ladder match is so grueling.
Yeah.
That if, mm-hmm. and you don't have to be factored into the finish, that if you are healthy but didn't get that chance, I could easily see Damian Priest being so pissed off, grabbing the case and just go, cash this in. Yeah. I want my titles back. Yeah, it'd be great.
Yeah, like great, especially if it was back. Especially if it was like, say, R-Truth was up at the top and going to pull that down, and maybe, I don't know. Well, yeah, you can have R-Truth pull it down, right? And then he just loses his mind. It's like, no way, Truth isn't screwing us again. Cash it in. It's successful. It's much better than him cashing in on Cody and Cody hitting him with a Cody cutter and that's it. He's done, right? So let's have something like that. I mean, I hear what Justin's saying, but I think sometimes I like the element of surprise with that stuff, you know? And I'm okay with somebody saying, you know what? I'm not ready to be world champion, but I'm sure as hell would love to be the guy who took that title off of Gunther or something like that, yeah. Right? You know? And look at what they did with that Obi Fema or whatever down in NXT. That was great use of it, right? It's the North American title, but all of a sudden you got this guy who looks like a stud because he won that. So, yeah, I just like to see it because the cash-in has really felt kind of meh for the longest time. So just shake it up a little bit. With the women's matches, yeah, I feel like, you know, I think Bayley's going to do whatever she can to help Io look great too. But I think Bayley's going to take that title finally. They need to put that title on her just as a good story. Rhea, she's got to win. I mean, you know, Rhea's just been on such a roll. It's no different than what they're doing with Roman. That win's got to be something huge for somebody to beat her, right? And she's going to be a babyface pretty soon too. And either that or they have that collision with her and Bianca or whatever. So,
well,
yeah.
I think Rhea has lost the quality argument of her run, right? Like her last couple matches have been against Maxine Dupri and Ivy Nile. That who has she beaten that you remember? So she doesn't, I don't think she has that iconic victory in the last year that really solidified her run. Like, yeah, at Mania last year for sure. But what are we talking about right now? And this character is phenomenal. And if she can get a chance to break away from Judgment Day, I think she can really, like I said, solidify herself. And starting with an iconic win, absolutely. I agree with you. Like, she needs it. She really, really needs it. But to my Roman Rock point, Becky is someone that beats her. And there's no worse for wear on either side because it's Becky, right?
It's Becky,
but,
yeah.
Yeah, but if Rhea beats Becky, then, oh, shit, Rhea's got that win. So I think that would be the way to go.
Yeah, for sure. I like that. Do you feel like they're dropping the ball on Gunther a bit this Mania season?
Yeah, because they could have told something thick about his story as opposed to just his title reign. Because now he's a deity, right? And it's lacked in his matches, where it's now godlike Gunther is beating everyone. And I really can't stand the Sammy build because we do this every time with Sandy. Oh, yeah. Sammy. Oh, I'm just the underdog. I got to build up from everything. And he literally said in the same fucking promo, but I main evented last year at WrestleMania and I won those tag titles. Yeah, because you're not an underdog. You're a damn superstar who is fantastic at wrestling. Stop with this. So basically you're telling me you get in your own way. Okay, so I got to stop for you because you're a fucking idiot. Like,
he almost single-handedly destroyed the bloodline last year, right? You know, you're not the underdog.
Right. You have the ability to do the thing, and he lacks his own confidence, so you can't help those who don't want to help themselves. Like, if you go, I know I got this, just give me the rest with your support, and let's go do this together, absolutely. But when he comes out and he goes, you know, guys, I don't know if I have it anymore. I've been really like losing on myself. Well, that's a you problem, man. Like, get your shit together because we watched you beat the bloodline last year and it was fucking amazing.
Yeah.
And to be at this point again, where he's got to be another guy coming from underneath. Well, what about your cachet? What about your 20 years of wrestling? What about your main event in WrestleMania? Like, that should be worth something. And he never walks with that attitude. You know, a guy like AJ Styles always walks with that attitude where like, I am one of the greatest of all times, regardless of what I win. And he's shorter than everyone. Like, I don't give a fuck how big I am. I'll come in and whoop your ass. Like, and Sammy not having that attitude about his abilities is really frustrating to get behind.
It is. Like, how do you get behind that?
Yeah,
you
know? To your point, is a disservice to Gunther. Sorry, that's what I was getting at. Yeah.
Yeah, to me, that's, they should have. The story is written for Gable, the story was written there, and that would have been such a feel good moment for him to finally, you know, get that win, beat Gunther, and it would have been a fantastic match. But whatever,
and,
I mean,
and their matches speak to a WrestleMania build, the way they wrestled together, and the story. Absolutely, I agree with you 100% there. It should have been Gable, and Gable for the victory.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Yeah, he should have took the title, and he should have been able to bring his little girl in the ring and celebrate and all that good stuff, right? But yeah. I'll tell you another guy. I feel it. Yes, the match is going to be great. You mentioned it. The match will be great because you got three superbly talented individuals. But I feel like they kind of did a disservice to Logan this year as well, because like Logan Paul is a freaking superstar, and that guy, like, I mean, he had me wanting him to win that title in Saudi against Roman, right? Like, that's how good he is. And I feel like they could have got something a bit more out of him in LA Knight or something like that, just from the whole Hollywood type of thing. I would have liked to have seen Randy and Kevin Owens in the tag team Turmoil, and because they would have been a very believable team that somebody could take the titles in that. And I'm liking this little oddball friendship with the two of them as well, right? The thing on SmackDown where he punched the two guys from Pretty Deadly in the face at the same time. He's like, Randy, I did it, you know?
I did it again.
That's good. I like that stuff. And Owens is good at that. But either way, they're going to put on a great match. I see Logan keeping the title here. What about you?
Yeah, because I think there's just like the accidental pairing of, you know, Riddle and Randy, I think this accidental pairing of KO and Randy really has legs. I think it's something that we all really could get behind and enjoy, not just from the sarcasm, but like their actual work is just amazing. And, you know, I said it going into Royal Rumble that I thought Randy is the perfect person to take the title off of Roman because he had that icon status already. And even if it was Randy beats Roman and then Roman gets it back at Mania, you still have an opportunity now that Roman has been taken down. So when Cody meets Roman at SummerSlam, bang, all good. But of course, The Rock came in, and that's a better story to tell, more than fine. So since Randy's not going to do that, I would absolutely love to see him and KO next to each other every single Friday for 3 years, having the same type of run that he did with RK-Bro. But I do think there's a chance that Randy's just building towards something better. And I would love to see, Randy and Cena go after that, you know, 17th title in a vacant title ladder match. I think would be amazing, but you know, that's me fantasy booking. I come up with great ideas.
No, you could be, or you still got the built-in Cody Randy thing, right? So that's perfect for a media. I mean,
Oh, that was the other thing I said. I guess I might have said it on my show. I don't know, but Terrible Wrestling Takes, TWTakesPodcast.com, TWTakesPodcast on Twitter. You know, if Randy beat Roman at Rumble and Cody wins the Rumble, Cody versus Randy has an actual story, part of Cody's story, the story he wants to finish, where Roman has nothing to do with his story whatsoever, except the fact that Roman was the champion when Cody came back. That's the only thing Roman has to do with his story. His story had nothing to do with beating Roman. It had something to do with getting the title. And if Randy had that title, are you kidding me? Everyone would want Cody to win because the story exists. But anyway, that's I agree with you.
Could you imagine, just think about this, man. Say Randy had taken the title off of him at Royal Rumble, and you're going into WrestleMania, it's Cody Randy building for this, and they do pretty much the same build they do with The Rock, and you have Randy saying to him, fuck your story. Yep. How much more would that hit with him saying it? Because I am your story, son.
Yes, that is exactly it. That is the parallel. That is the 100% thing that Cody has been talking about. He's talking about Randy. He's not talking about Roman. Mm-hmm. I agree with you 1,000%. And not for nothing, people would care so much more than they do now. Mm-hmm. But the reason why it's not as relatable with Roman, it's not a Roman problem. It's a Cody story problem.
Yep. I agree with you. I mean, that's pretty much like for WrestleMania. We're gonna have our other stuff that I'm sure they're gonna throw in there. You're gonna have Jade maybe make an appearance with Bianca and Naomi or something like that. But just one last thing before we go, just your thoughts on that Raw. For me watching, I'm like, okay, I'm not like everybody else where it's like, oh, the Attitude Era is back. I don't care if the Attitude Era comes back. I don't need the Attitude Era comes back. I just want a good era to be happening right now. I did feel a difference in the feeling of this show, but a lot of it was because of rock. But punk brought a different feeling to it. Drew's walking with a swagger like no tomorrow. Like there was a lot of, I feel like a lot of people are starting to have a bit of swagger and stuff like that. How did you feel about that? And how did you feel about the whole ending and everything? Like I thought the ending was done fantastic. I had only one complaint. I said on Twitter, it wasn't a complaint. It was just like a little touch on it. Like I would have loved a Cody at the very end if he had said to Rock, make it good. Just like Dusty said to the Horseman that time, because it just would have tied into that Dusty thing. But yeah, go ahead. What are your thoughts on Raw? How are you feeling about it?
Yeah, so I enjoyed Raw for Raw's sake, and I do feel like they more or less let Chicago be Chicago, right? Like, we know this town. Let's service the fans. Like I mentioned earlier, I thought it was one of Punk's best promos. Hinting at the Attitude Era coming back, he did say, sorry, we're not on Netflix yet, and he made an oral sex joke. Yeah. So there's the opportunity, and I hate when all promos do that, like wink wink nudge nudge, I'm about to say something. That's one of my problems with Cody too, where he's like, and I just want to, you all know that I don't want to peel back behind the curtain, but certain dignitaries and people that we're familiar with from
take a look at my cufflinks too.
I think I'm wearing my Bullet cufflinks. Great, dude, the Bullet Club sucks, you're welcome.
Nobody had a clue about that.
As I tweeted about that particular promo, zero pop, right? Mm-hmm. The crowd that you're talking in front of does not care about your Bullet Club, does not care about your particular Too Sweet, does not care about all that stuff. So, but no, this particular Raw, I did enjoy. Like I said, I loved Punk's disposition. Even when he was talking shit to Seth, when he was talking shit to Drew, it never felt burial. Yes, Punk came off strong, which I've been waiting for. Something where I can go, okay, Punk really did it. But he used to be snarky, and he used to try to cut the legs out from underneath, and he would really, like, try to go over the top, but it would miss. It didn't miss in Chicago, which is great. He actually, when Drew said he's the golden child or the chosen one, and then he goes, well, what do you say? What dignitary high moral compass called you the chosen one? Who picked you? He completely stumped Drew on that, and I fucking loved it. And I loved it because it's true, it's obvious, and it wasn't such a hammer that Drew wouldn't be able to get out from underneath it, because the crowd didn't go, ooh, he fucking got you. And then they start chanting Vince McMahon, right? Like, it was a great line. Drew had the ability to come back, couldn't, regrouped, came back with something else a little bit later. Like, it was perfect. So that kind of thing where you have a segment that goes and goes and goes, and then into another one that goes and goes and goes, 1000% loved it. Problem with, Cody, he gets on the mic, he does his thing, talks shit on Pat McAfee for having people on his show. Like, the way he goes about it is like, but we've all seen it, right, guys? Like, stop. Go out there, tell your story. Your story is what I'm listening to, not what I want you to say. And that's a big difference. I love The Rock coming out, not saying shit, walking out. Cody's only response was, it was a promise he can't live up to. Bang. Ending segment, I thought he was getting thrown over the top, a la Austin into the river, right?
Like, I did too, yeah.
Yeah, I was waiting for it, and it didn't happen. I love that the beatdown took place on right next to Cody's bus. He ended up, busted open by the door on a doormat, which basically to me just signified, like, this is so close to home, you know, like just little symbolisms, because it could have happened at the end of the bus. It could have happened on the back of the bus. It could happen on the front of the bus. But being on that doormat of, you know, I am now bringing this to your home, I thought was phenomenal. And another thing that we'll get into a shit on AEW point, right? The Rock took a solo shot of the camera, talked his shit, pulled the camera, bang, all that stuff. You pan over to Cody. What happened? Bleeding. looked like a blood packet. It was a little too bright, especially at night, whatever. Like, but what do they do on AEW? They fucking hone in right on the guy as he's going, you know what? Oh, let me see. Yep, I think I got it. Hey, cameraman, did I get that? Yeah. Oh, let me ask the producers. Hey, can you see that in my camera? Yeah, okay. Yeah. Or they do a wide shot where you can see the guy actually doing it. So,
or even just him taking out his blade. You see that?
Yeah. Right? Yeah. Or even, you know, like Moxley just throwing it underneath his jeans or some shit. Because you always see something.
The Rock should have took his little bullet cufflink and cut him with
it. Yeah, right. But that pan back to Cody, to the blood, you hear the crowd. Whoa! Yeah. Like, the idea that you can shock people with blood. Blood's not an Attitude Era thing. Blood is a wrestling thing.
And it's a wrestling thing, yeah.
It's to accentuate points of drama. And that was perfect in this moment. And The Rock has a terrible filter as is. So even when he used to do those margarita things when Terramana first came out, and he could not just, it's like, oh, this is great as fucking watermelon margarita. Like, he just can't help himself. It's who he is. So the fact that he drops an F-bomb or he's saying shit and all that stuff. Number one, in America, it's on USA Network, which is a pay-for channel. Therefore, you're allowed to curse whatever you want. There are zero FCC guidelines that go on to it. Bang. So he can say whatever he wants. And it's advertisers who get pissed off that would pull out. When they get on Netflix, yes, maybe all that goes away. But you know what else? Advertisers are still going to be there. So they're going to say the right things. But it's The Rock, so they're giving him latitude. They are not bringing back the Attitude Era. But when something feels like the Attitude Era, then what you really need to say is they did a great job. Yeah. And I thought they did a great job on this Raw.
Yeah, I agree. Does Cody have to come back this week on Raw in a pair of cowboy boots, jeans, and a t-shirt with a cowbell?
No, because I not for once believe he is a cowboy. You know, he said this as well, right? Like, after Bray Wyatt passed away, part of his promo was, you know, I know cowboys, and Bray Wyatt was a cowboy, and that really bothered me. But anyway, he's not a cowboy because when, let's say your dad's a garbage man, and he saves all his money to send you to Harvard to be a lawyer, you are no longer a garbage man.
Yeah, exactly.
You're now a lawyer. You know what I mean? So like that's what Cody is. He's the grandson of a plumber because his grandfather just so happened to be a plumber. Mm-hmm. But he's the son of a professional wrestler. Yep. He ain't no fucking cowboy. You know, like a guy like Randy Orton, where you know his story, where he wanted nothing to do with wrestling because he didn't want to be, you know, cast off of his dad and all this shit. And he goes through his adversity and you realize he's born to be a wrestler. He never comes out and says, I ain't a wrestler. I'm an army soldier. You know, like it's just, no, I'm a fucking wrestler. So no, he's not a gritty cowboy. He's just not. Cody's not. I'm sorry. Like, not only that, he's from Georgia. He's from Georgia. No disrespect to the people of Georgia, but in wrestling, if you're from Texas, you're the cowboy, you know? And you're not from Texas. Your dad's from Texas. For instance, I'm a New Yorker. I have New York in my blood. I moved away when I was 15. I've been in Delaware almost twice as long as I was in New York, but New York is in my soul. My son is not a New Yorker, and he will not talk like me the way I do. He will not act and reflect the way I do because he didn't live and breathe it. And he will never claim it. So guess what, Cody? You're not a fucking cowboy. Sorry. So no, he doesn't. Because if he does, he's going to look foolish. That's the other thing. Yeah. If he does, he's going to look foolish because it's not what his character is. I would much rather see him Bret Hart it, right? When Bret Hart wasn't in wrestling tights, he was in jeans and boots, right? Mm-hmm. And he even wrestled in jeans a couple times because it's not my... And we do it with the shirt off, right? And he looked fucking amazing. That's the other... Anyway, so... That's the kind of thing that I would like to see Cody do. Like, okay, you have street clothes, but he never does because he's always wearing a suit because he's playing the part, right? Mm-hmm. So, yeah, I'd like to see him wrestle otherwise, but no, he ain't no cowboy.
Yeah. Yeah, no. Okay. I agree. Yeah, no, I mean, that pretty much wraps it up, my friend. Like, I appreciate you coming on here and spreading the words of wisdom, the not terrible wrestling takes. You know, I will say one last thing about the whole, like I was saying about the feel of Raw. And for me, it always boils down to the little things. The blood was a little thing that's not overused. The cursing by The Rock is a little thing that's not overused. For me, what helps with the feel is even simple things like the backstage interviewers throwing back to the announcers instead of just standing there like robots and just like idiots that just don't know what to do after a wrestler walks away. You know, the camera shots changing, that camera shot where they followed Sammy right through the back and stuff like that, that made a difference. Announcers just referring to people that aren't with WWE anymore, something like that, because there is a world outside of WWE. Just all those different things. Even Cody coming out to rescue, was it Jay? I think he was coming out, and no music played. That drives me out of my mind when a rescue happens and the music plays. Like, is somebody stopping at Grell and saying, play my music, I'm coming out to save this guy from getting killed, you know, even that stuff. And I think Triple H is acknowledging, like, you know what, guys, let's make this a bit more realistic. And that's all we ask for. And that's what you're asking for with Cody. Just be a bit more realistic, my friend, and then we'll get behind you even more. But, you know, we'll see what happens. But anyway, either way, it's going to be an amazing two nights of wrestling. I mean, it's WrestleMania. It's going to be huge. And there's going to be lots of surprises, and yeah, good on you, man, that you're going to get to see it.
No, I appreciate that. And, you know, just to piggyback off of something you said, I think they're doing a great job with Cody dialing him back. The forced Cody's here, right? They used to make sure that they got to the whoa and his music every time, but being able to see him be a wrestler as opposed to presented as, you know, godlike Cody, I think is awesome. But yeah, look, I think WWE's in a great spot. I think professional wrestling in the overall is in a great spot. You know, of course, AEW has its issues. You know, TNA is doing, you know, some solid work. They don't quite have the buzz they used to, which is a bummer. But yeah, man, in the overall, I'm really having a fun time watching wrestling. I think NXT is really hitting a groove too. Like I said, we'll be going to Stand and Deliver as well. Excited for that. So, yeah, man. The only thing I did want to get your take on, because I'm really bad at checking YouTube, so I don't know if you talked about this. Sting's last match. Mm-hmm. Did you have a chance to view it or find a way to watch it or anything like that? And what did you think of the homage to Sting that his last match was?
So, yeah, I did get to see it. You know what? I think on Twitter I said, you know, props where props are due. They did a great job with honoring Sting. It wasn't too over the top, wasn't too silly. I was really worried about the Young Bucks being involved in it, but they were fine. They did their job that they had to do. I loved that he had his sons out there. I thought that was really cool. I thought his sons looked great. I'd like to see a tag team of the board. You know, the only thing, if I was going to complain, but I'm not going to, because I know Sting wanted this, but you know, Darby doing that spot where he nearly killed himself. Again, when everybody freaks out when you complain about that, I don't complain about it because I'm like, oh, it's just a high spot. I complain because I don't want to watch wrestling worried about a man killing himself doing a spot. And I really, that bothered me watching him do that. It bothers me to know that this guy is going to be crippled by the time he's 40 years old and he's not going to be able to, you know, pick up his children or something like that. But whatever, that's just a spot. Sting, I don't care if they made him look like a zillion bucks by him overcoming every odd, that's great. It's his last match. Let him have it. Yeah, overall, I thought they did a good job with it. And I'll give AEW props. Obviously, Tony Khan is a massive Sting fan. I mean, I'm going to do another episode sometime talking about AEW and really what it is. Try not to be too negative. I think I've come to the conclusion that they're a fantasy wrestling organization, and that's okay. It's a fantasy match organization, and Tony's got all the money in the world to set those up, and it's for all those people that always said, geez, I wish I could see, you know, Ospreay against Kenny Omega, I wish I could see, you know, Jericho against so and so, and that's fine. But the only problem with that is, like, he can't be out there trying to act like we're putting so and so out of business. So it loses for a guy like me. I watched the Sting thing because I like Sting, but I'm not going to continuously watch AEW because I know there's going to be so much on there that pisses me off that I want to enjoy wrestling. I'm enjoying watching SmackDown and Raw. Like, I actually, when Monday night shows up, I'm like, I got to watch this live, which that hasn't happened in a long time either. Right. Cause I want to see what's happening here. But I think really it should be treated like a fantasy booking like a guy that can book whatever, and that's fine. It's fine like that. It's not going to displace WWE, nor does it need to. It's got its core group of people, and you know, let them have it. But yeah, I don't want to see anybody get killed in a ring either, though. You know, that
kind of stuff. Yeah, I had a hard time with the glass spots too. Even Sting's one. It just didn't feel like it had to happen.
Yeah.
Except the Sting one brought Flair and Steamboat into the match and gave them a reason to, you know, show their support for Sting that way, which is okay. Mm-hmm. But to your point, I felt that way too, man. I was like, you know what? Good on AEW for giving Sting an homage match to his career.
Yep.
Even though it wasn't necessarily filled with Easter eggs from his entire career, it was, how do we honor the entire career in one match and not have a match with a 65-year-old? And yep. I thought that was so well done. I cannot stand the Young Bucks, and they did everything they could to be a part of that match and give themselves to Sting, and I absolutely appreciate them for that. So, yeah, I found myself pleasantly surprised watching the match. I was like, you know what? That's really cool that they allowed that to happen.
Yep. And I mean, I'm not even mad about the speech going off the air or whatever. That was his speech for the crowd, whatever. It's fine. You know, it's all good, but yeah, I'm with you. Like I cannot stand the Young Bucks. And I know everybody's like, well, they're heels. No. They are unlikable is what they are. Yeah. And they're purposely trying to make the sport bad, but you know,
they take storytelling for granted.
They
don't give you something to care about because they'll tell you right up front, hey, we're the Young Bucks, this is our characters, this is what we're going to do, and then they just go out and do it as opposed to put you on an up and a down, right? One of the best parts about Roman Reigns' character, right? He's the master of the 2.99, right? Mm-hmm. One, two, oh my God, he was just about to lose, but he didn't. Like, that's simple enough to add to a match to make you think. But when you have Canadian Destroyer and Code Reds and this and that and super, look, I mentioned the Usos use super kicks like a jab, right?
Yes.
But every time the Young Bucks do a super kick, they do it to the level in which they're about to pin someone, right? Like, or it's like a zero sell moment. But every time the Usos use one, it's to set the next thing up, right? Mm-hmm. So that those little things, those little ways that you can tweak wrestling to like pull people in. No, they just want to put you on a roller coaster and just go around. Or, you know, that spinning thing at the fair, that, you know, the anti-gravity thing, like that's all they want to put you on. Just go. It's like, okay, man, I get it. But what do we just watch? You know?
Well,
but
I've long said that I'm convinced there's a group of fans and a lot of them are watching AEW right now. And this isn't a shot on AEW or whatever, but I'm convinced there's a group of fans that would be perfectly fine if every wrestler just got in the ring, did all their finishing maneuvers and showed you like super kicks or whatever, and they rate it. You know, they would hold up signs and honestly, they'd be plenty happy with that, right? Because they don't care about a story. They don't care about drama. They don't care about emotions. Like, oh my God, that was cool. Holy crap, that was cool. Oh, wow, look at that. He kicked out of that. It's like, but it doesn't make sense to me. Like, they proved it on Monday night. Like, they had that Canadian Destroyer by Ricochet, and it actually made sense in the match, and it was sold. And that's all you have to do. We agree. Like, all these people are very athletic. I get it. But storytelling does help. But that's fine. You don't like to tell stories? That's fine. I'm not going to watch it then.
Right,
you know, because I can watch a bunch of indie people, you know, go do all these moves and not sell it, right? You know, and then have fun with the matches. But I want to be pulled into the story to the point that I do want to see the match. There's no reason for me to want to see these matches. Like, I'm sorry. I just do not get involved. I don't get into, so-and-so is the best wrestler in the world, so this guy's got to beat him. It's like, but then next week, two other guys are arguing who's the best wrestler in the world. It's like, well, who is the best wrestler? Whereas I just know that Roman Reigns right now is unbeatable. And I want to see the story that's leading to the guy that's going to beat him, you know?
Yeah, 1,000%. I agree with you. And I'm one of those that Roman is absolutely allowed to lose, but make it make sense. And I think that's, you know, to the point of you having me on today. And I appreciate that, brother. You know, it looks like we're finally getting that story that's going to make sense. And look, even if it doesn't happen at Mania, I would hope a lot of people just reserve their judgment to the end of this particular story, because what they finally done is they wrote a chapter in Cody's book that has to absolutely do with the bloodline. And yeah, as that goes, Cody's story is going to end with defeating Roman at some point. And if it doesn't happen at Mania, that 30% that I feel, that's more than okay, because the next time they wrestle, it's going to be 80-20. It's going to be 90-10. It damn near be 99.1%, because anything can happen. So, you know, they're finally doing it. And I mean, you really tripped me up earlier when you said, you know, I'm more excited to see Cody versus Rock, because I'm like, man, that really does mean that that 30% is a strong 30, you know, it's a strong 30. Because if you're leading towards Cody Rock, I mean, hey, this might be something. But I think that inkling you have is, I think that's the swerve. So we'll see though. We got two nights to figure it out.
Well, how boring would wrestling be if you knew 100% of the time who's going to win? You know, what's the point of watching this? You know, this
telling
is
you, man,
scripted,
that's,
folks.
that's my gripe on Twitter. You know, and actually, you just tagged me the other day in something that I had said, and I'll let you kick me out in a little bit, even though you tried signing off a second ago.
I just want to respect your time. That's all. Yeah.
I appreciate that. Let me see if I could pull it up real quick. I know it was a little bit ago. It was
While you're pulling that up, Bishop, I will say, to your point, Chad Gable's story, we just talked about it. Chad Gable can wrestle circles around Sami Zayn. He can wrestle circles around Gunther, but that doesn't matter. That's not why we want to see him finish his story. Yeah. It's the story. He has this perfect story about redemption and being so close. And he's got that Rocky moment and all this stuff. We know Chad Gable's an Olympic wrestler. He's going to tie anybody up in knots, right? So we don't need that part of it. It's the same thing with Kurt Angle. Like, who's going to beat Kurt Angle in real life? You know, like,
right, nobody,
who's
going to
beat
yeah.
Brock? Who's going to beat Brock Lesnar in real life? But there's a story there, you know?
Yeah, no, absolutely. And that's fine. It was perfect timing. I was able to pull it up. But to the Gable point, you know, another thing that really makes WrestleMania a little bit of a bummer is that he had shot one in front of his daughter and he lost. So damn it, you want to see shot two.
You do. Know?
Yeah, and that's what really puts the story over the top. So this guy on Twitter, and I won't shout him out just because I don't need to go any further than it already has, but he said the rejection The Rock faced between Black Adam and his initial return to WWE might be the best thing to happen to him as a performer. It forced him to self-reflect, dig deeper into his bag, and rediscover himself as a performer. We don't get the final boss run without that. To my comment, I said, I wouldn't believe this if The Rock said it himself. Hashtag terrible wrestling take. Yeah. And I say that because people come up with these grandiose opinions without knowing shit. And I swear on everything. I follow The Rock. At the beginning of the podcast, bang, some Zola, right? Like, I'm a mark for what The Rock does. I love Black Adam as a movie. It's not the other movies, right? Like, but the movie itself is actually really well done. My opinion, right? He put out Papa Tui. I bought it that weekend. I got it on the counter, like all that stuff. He's too fucking busy to care if Black Adam failed, so he needs to redeem himself. He's too fucking busy to go, oh my God, I can't believe they booed me when I came back to Roman Reigns in 2015, or I came out to confront Roman this time. I can't believe they keep... He's too busy for that. Like I said early in the beginning of this, they said, you know what? Let's tell this story. When he got booed, or when Twitter took over and was like, oh my God, The Rock is taking Cody's event. Oh, perfect. You guys ate it up right away. I didn't even have to take 2 weeks to get it done. Like, they ate too quick. That guy ate it up so much. He's convincing himself that the reason this is happening is because Black Adam failed. Are you fucking kidding me? The Rock has zero time to be motivated to do otherwise. You know, like, I'm going to look up his IMDb real quick, because I'm pretty sure that The Rock has done probably 10 movies, a couple different projects. I mean, he's since Black Adam came out, he's done, what, like Red Notice and all that. Let me see here. Okay. So Black Adam, he did Young Rock, Fast X, and that's what came out. He has 15 upcoming projects. Of which
the UFL as well.
Right, the UFL. He's in production for Red Notice 2. He's pre-production for the next Fast and Furious film. He's doing another San Andreas. They, you know, like, he's too busy to care. Like, yes, it bothered him that Black Adam didn't hit the way it was supposed to, but that's not going to make him become better at being a wrestler. No, he's The Rock doing Rock shit. Are you kidding me? The fuck are these people, man? And we do it too, right? Like, wrestling podcasts. So we have opinions. We see stuff. We go crazy. But we don't say what I think they were doing was this.
Yeah.
You go, I saw this on TV. I find it relatable, unrelatable. Hopefully they can make another decision going forward, or the story gets better another way. But yeah, okay, maybe Triple H can be heavy-handed in certain storytelling aspects, but we don't, I never once said, oh, well, this is a Vince McMahon guy, so this is what's going to happen. No, there's a guy out in front of us, and it would be cool if we saw this. There's a guy out in front of us, and it was awesome when he did that. But to think that you know better that deep, that The Rock was so butthurt by Black Adam that he becomes the final boss now, it's like, get the fuck out of here, man. He's had so many more successes than he has failures. There's zero chance that creatively he felt so inept that he has to recreate his wrestling character into the final boss. So fucking stupid that people go there. Yeah. And that's the type of terrible wrestling take that I see that makes me create a podcast.
I know. Yeah. I mean, yeah. Black Adam gets a 14 on Rotten Tomatoes. So I'm going to go back to WWE and prove that I am a good actor. You know, that's
dumb, man.
That's probably why Austin came back for WrestleMania 38 because of his movie career. It's, he felt like, you know, it's, it, it needed to be justified.
Yeah. Yep. His podcast didn't last anymore. His movie career, he did, you know, a couple, he did Steven Seagal movie that went straight to DVD. Like, you know, he said, you know what? Yeah. I got to come back and finish my story.
Exactly. Just wait. So Cena will too. Cena will too. You know, after Ricky Stenicki is a bomb. That's what's going to happen. Yeah.
God, so good, God. Man. It's amazing.
It's amazing. It's never ending on there. And like I say, we talked off air about like the craziness, and that's probably what led to depression for me is going on Twitter. But, you know, I like, I'm just blocking people left and right. So if you're listening to this and you're a fan of the show and you're blocked, you probably said something stupid. I do give a chance. I'll actually, if I see something, I'll go on to their site to see if maybe it's a one-off, maybe they have some really good stuff and there's just a bad day. And 9 times out of 10, it's somebody who's like 16 or 20 who's, you know, started watching wrestling 5 years ago, and they're making comments about stuff from the Attitude Era or you know, the 80s or whatever. I'm like, oh god, just done, blocked, because you're gonna keep showing up my timeline now that I've looked at your tweet, and it's gonna be stupid. So see ya.
You know, there's a real irony to how real people feel about something so fake, right? Mm-hmm. Like, could you imagine having 30 years of the Big Bang Theory and every single week somebody saying that, and I mean, I know Sheldon and Kaley Cuoco, I don't know her name, but like, I can't believe that they brought Blossom into this show. How can they even think about why she's such a, you know, like, but Blossom isn't, no, well, this isn't Blossom. This is a new character from Ian Bialik. And, you know, this isn't just the girl from, you know, 8 Simple Rules for Dating My Teenage Daughter. This is a, like, could you imagine that shit? Like, literally, it's a fucking TV show. It's a TV show. And you're complaining about what your favorite character in this TV show is doing to the point where you think that another movie he did is affecting his performance in this TV show. That is crazy. That is fucking crazy. Look, I'm...
Justice for Wolowitz.
You know, like, jeez Louise, man. Like, I can't believe that the kid from Roseanne grew up to be a nerd on this other show. But, man, he was really good in Roseanne. Like, what are we talking about? Like, it's so crazy. Like, you know, oh, Al Bundy is in, you know, Arrested Development now. Like, I can't believe it. It's not Al Bundy. It's Ed O'Neill playing another fucking character, right? Like, it's just, it's amazing. You know, you said something about, you know, the good guy needs to take a loss to become the hero now, right? Like, one of my favorite, the only movie experience that I ever had was watching Endgame. Anytime I ever went to the theater, I went and watched a movie, but I had an actual experience. I cried like 4 times the first time I saw Endgame in the theater. Because of how Infinity War ended. It ended in a way where you had no clue how they can win. And then Endgame is this consistent rebuild of the entire Avengers until you see the final battle where they're all rebuilt to a strength to finally beat the boss. And they tie in 12 years of movie making and storytelling in these ways that just go fucking bananas. And the first 12 times I saw it, I cried at some point in the movie. And then the 13th time I saw it, I was like, you know what? I'm okay now. You know, like, and I just say that to say, there is zero difference between WrestleMania and Endgame. It's the same thing. It is a performance for 3 fucking hours where they're going to tell you a story. So shut the fuck up and watch it.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, we could go on forever, but it was funny. It just popped up this week. It was Bret Hart and Stone Cold talking about their matches. And Bret said, like, all that mattered to me was you had to look strong in your loss. That was my main goal. I didn't care. I knew I was going to look strong in my win, but you had to look strong in your loss. And he brought up that all was going through his head was the movie One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest and the scene with Jack Nicholson failing to, like, rip the fountain off the wall or whatever it was. And he said, that's what I was thinking in my head. It's like, you know, you felt for that character. You just want him to succeed. And that's the whole point of you rising up with the, you know, pushing off and the blood coming down your face, and you almost got there. And the fans were there with you, and they were pulling you. They were pulling you up. And last second, that's it. You're done, right? And he said, but it didn't matter. I won whatever. Yeah, I was over. But you got over with that. And that's wrestling. You know, it's like the whole Jim Cornette meme. Like, that's wrestling, right? You know, when he's talking.
Are you kidding me? And that's such a great point, because what you're saying is so true. And Austin said it several times, right? It was Brett's idea for me to cut. Like, Brett wanted me to bleed. Brett said this match needs blood. One of the things that The Rock said on the McAfee show, not before Vegas, but after Vegas, I believe, he goes, you know, not for nothing, we all talk to each other anyway. Mm-hmm. So, like, The Rock, Cody, Roman, Seth, they're trying to figure out how to make this happen.
Yep.
They want to make sure that this is the best it could be. So anyone taking one side or the other is just foolish. Yes, I have rooting interest, but it's based off the story they're telling me. I have favorites in this particular show. You know, like, I used to watch the show Bones, and I had favorite bad guys, right? Like, I wanted to see the build of Palant. I wanted to see the build of the Bone Collector. Like, you know, I really wanted to see these, not the Bone Collector or something else. Anyway, I wanted to see these arcs take a certain route because of the creativity and the storytelling and the villainry, right? That's what this is, man. That's what this is. But I want my heroes to not lie to me. I want my heroes to look like a hero. I want my hero to act like a hero. So I only like Roman for the quality of work he does. He is a bad guy, and I want him to lose. But show me somebody that can actually beat him.
Mm-hmm.
I'll wait. You know? So that's where I'm at with it, for sure. Cody gets there.
100%, man. 100%. Like, it's you got to believe in these people. And yeah, we want them working together to say, okay, I'm going to do this to make you look like this. I'm going to do this to make you... Instead of, like, people going, well, I want to do this, this, and this, because I think it's going to make me look good. Like, that's why, like, my biggest problem with the no sells and stuff, that it doesn't make you look good. It doesn't make you look tough, because at the end of the day, I know these moves are, you're not trying to hurt the person for real. So you don't look tough by jumping up and no selling and stuff like that. But if Steve effing Austin can do scratch and claw and finally drop dead in a sharpshooter, which in reality is really not going to cause you to pass out. But man, I was there. I was there. It's still to this day, my favorite match of all time, because there's so much storytelling. And not just that, Jim Ross was phenomenal in telling the story in that. And he wasn't even the main announcer. Vince was. But the way Austin and him, I'm sorry, the way he sold Austin, and you could feel it during the match. Ross was a fan of Bret Hart when the match started, but he kept putting Austin a little bit closer, a little bit closer. Then all of a sudden they switched, and Austin's a stud. Austin's a stud, you know, all this stuff. That's magic. That's working together. Everybody's working together to paint the same picture. And that's what's going on right now with WWE. And I'm not seeing it in other places. And yeah, there's been some great matches on the independent circle and all this. And you might have, you know, had some stuff in TNA, but you don't have that. These guys haven't stepped in the ring once, and I am sold. I am sold. Yeah. All you gotta do is not, in the immortal words, all you gotta do is not fuck it up. That's it. You know? That's all you gotta do. Whereas in the other direction, you have to do so much to get get people bought into it.
Yeah, one of those dream matches out there, right, is the Young Bucks versus the New Day or the Usos and all that stuff. And I want it too, but for one reason only. The Usos will force them to slow down. The Usos will force them to take a beat. The New Day will force the Young Bucks to tell a story because they don't work that way. They don't go that fast. They slow down. If you have Kenny Omega versus Roman Reigns, what do you think that match looks like?
That's a thing of beauty. It's a thing of beauty.
It's absolute 10 minutes at the beginning of Kenny Omega getting beat down, going, oh my God, what am I in front of? To the next 10 minutes of Roman Reigns selling all this bullshit from Kenny. Well, Kenny has to act like, I can't believe I'm doing this. And then the final 5 minutes of false finishes to a 2.5 count, to a 2.75, to a 2.99, to where Kenny doesn't know what's going on. He turns around to look at a Bloodline member, Superman punch, off the rope spear, 1, 2, 3, right? That's the kind of thing that we would get, and it would be the most investment you can get out of a Kenny Omega match because he'd be forced to slow down. Mm-hmm. And everything, every move would mean something. And that's the kind of shit that you get out of the storytelling that we're talking about when it comes to in-ring work, because it has to mean something moment by moment. You know, that again, that Austin Bret Hart match, I mean, that was I started at 9. So 9, 10, 11, 12, 13 was just full on for me. I'm 12, 13 years old at the time, just going, oh my God, this is crazy. And I rode the Stone Cold wave. As soon as I heard Jim Ross say he's got ice water in his veins, I'm like, this is the coolest thing I've ever heard. I'm a Stone Cold fan. Yeah. So I already the year before, where Bret was pissed about Monsoon restarting the match, That's where I thought Bret turned heel, to be honest. So I was on Bret's a bad guy, Austin's a good guy since then, right? So this double turn that happened, I was like, no, bad guy, good guy. What are you talking about? But yeah, I rode that wave, like, and I love that match as well. I haven't watched it in a while, so you know, maybe I gotta pick that up soon.
I mean, Bret's my all time number one. Sorry, and I know people will argue that stuff, but he just paints a picture in there, and he brings the other person up that level. Like prior to that match, it was Steamboat Savage, but I have one critique of Steamboat Savage is they did a move for move, step by step, kind of what you see nowadays where they practice and all this, right? And they put on one hell of a match with all these false finishes and stuff. But the whole point of that match was Savage put Steamboat out of wrestling and nearly killed the guy. They shouldn't have had a match like that. It should have been Steamboat coming out like a madman trying to destroy him. Whereas the Bret and Austin match, they had so much hate for each other. You just had a brawl, a crazy brawl, and they had this, you had to have submission match, you had blood, you had all this stuff. It made sense. There were so many stories in there, and that's why I always put Bret and Austin over that one, right? So,
I don't even like the Steamboat Savage match, to be honest. Like, I get its place in history, and maybe this is an episode for another day, and we can watch it together, and I'll tell you exactly my takes on it. But with the outside stuff that had to do with the match, it felt very... I felt very not invested in the outside stuff because why is, you know, Animal here? What's the stuff with Liz that's taking away from the match? But also that match moves so fast for that time period.
Time frame,
That like the people were, you know, wrestlers really weren't doing that in, you know, what was that, 90 or 89?
87.
87. So yeah, like, you know, they weren't really moving like that, and it felt out of place, and it looked like they were, like you said, too choreographed, which I know Macho Man was. Yeah. So I never really felt the passion in that. It felt more like a spectacle. And then the outside stuff really ruined it for me. That's why I don't like WrestleMania 17, even though Austin and Rock really liked that one the most because they sold out Houston. You know, again, wrestlers care about the business, not necessarily the fans that way. But I, you know, anyway, so yeah, I have my own terrible wrestling takes when it comes to WrestleMania 3 for sure.
No, that's fine. That's a good, and I'll argue that Savage's best match is actually WrestleMania 5 against Hogan because of one, the storyline is just phenomenal. The mega powers explode, but they wrestled that match like two guys that hate each other, right? And that's the point. And that's the whole Bret Austin thing. It was two guys that hate each other and a very bitter Bret that's ready to turn heel. An Austin that's just an ass kicker and just ready to finally get to that main event and all that stuff. It's beautiful stuff.
And another, I mean, again, we can do this all day. When we talk about rivals, right? It's Austin Rock, right? But Rock's best matches and builds have been with Triple H, right? And Austin and The Rock's best stuff was really around the IC title, not even their main event stuff, right?
Him and Triple H, yeah.
Well, no, but well, both, right? Rock and Austin's best stuff was around their IC title run, because everything outside of that was about leadership and Vince and all that stuff, and of course, great matches. But Triple H versus The Rock for the heavyweight title and the IC title, I think, is The Rock's best actual wrestling work was with Triple H. But I think Austin's best stories and wrestling is with Bret Hart by far. No one else. No one else comes close. Now, the pageantry and what wrestling is on a whole, him and The Rock, 1,000% all day, every day, right? But Triple H and The Rock, I think that's their best pairing. And Bret Hart and Austin, I think that's their best pairing.
Yeah, I mean, just to finish with this, if somebody said, show me one match that's going to make me a wrestling fan, I'm showing them Bret and Austin. Right. Because of the whole story and just the passion and all that. So there you go. Because there's no way you can watch that and not come away and go, holy shit, that was something else, right? Yeah, I'd have to explain how we got there. But, you know, that's the one. But, yeah. Anyways, man, pump your stuff. Let us know where we can find you once again.
Yeah, at TW Takes Podcast on Twitter/X and twtakespodcast.com. Just search the Terrible Wrestling Takes Podcast on all your audio platforms. As we said in the beginning, we're two part-time podcasters that came together to make a part-time podcast. but, you know, look, life does what it does. And, you know, I recently took a job that has me working all kinds of crazy hours. And once I'm settled in, I will be doing my show because I absolutely love talking wrestling, especially with guys like you, BC. So thank you so much for having me on. And, you know, I'll be around. So anytime you need me, brother, I'll find the time to get with you.
No problem, my friend. I really appreciate you coming on. And for everybody that's listening to this, I know I apologize. It has been kind of haphazard. It has been a little bit late and stuff like that. But have faith. It just, you know, they just got to get inspired to do the right. I'm not going to put out something half-assed. Let's put it that way. So I want to put out something fun. And I think I might have come up with a little formula to make it more fun again. But anyways, if you want to find me, probably go to Instagram. It's probably where I'm more active. It's Wrestling with the Truth on Instagram and also Wrestling with the 80s on Instagram. YouTube, please go on over to YouTube. Check out the YouTube channel, Wrestling with the 80s. A little late on putting some stuff out, but there's some more going to be coming out soon on that. And then on Twitter, it's at WWTTPod on Twitter. That's probably the one I'm more active for this pod is on that. But anyways, find me. You'll find me. If you're listening to this, you'll find a way to find me. Anyways. Thanks again, Bishop. I really appreciate this. Make sure you go follow this man. He's got some fantastic takes on Twitter. And listen to the podcast. There's lots in the back catalog that you can go catch up on while he's preparing to put some more good stuff up. Anyways, folks, enjoy WrestleMania 40. I think it's going to be a good one.